Right now at O'Reilly Auto Parts, pick up 2 5-1/4 ounce bottles of Lucas Fuel Injector Cleaner for $9. Clean and lubricate your fuel system while increasing miles per gallon with 2 bottles of Lucas Fuel Injector Cleaner for $9 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Limits apply. See store for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Independent Corner Radio Show. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody. Before we begin tonight's show, I'd like to ask, if you enjoy the show, for you guys to like us on Facebook at the Independent Corner Radio Show and on Twitter and Instagram at Indie Corner Live. Now, tonight's show is a special show. We've got the director of the movie Occupants here, as well as one of the actors. Another actor should be calling in hopefully tonight as well. But we've got, Russell Emanuel. How you doing, Russell?
Good. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Good. Yes. And, Michael, I totally asked how to say your last name. I'm sure you get this a lot. It's you just told me it's a Pugliese.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. It's Pugliese. The G is silent.
Okay, good. Yeah, awesome.
Close enough.
Okay, yeah. I'm sure you get that. You get asked that all the time. I am.
I do. But it's all good.
Sorry about that.
No worries, man.
And I believe our other guest for tonight should be on right now. Hello, is this Robert Picardo? Robert? Okay. I guess he just hung up. Hopefully he will call back in, because I guess he was waiting for the thing and I didn't get him on there in time, but hopefully he'll call back in. First of all, Russell, how did you, get involved with Occupants?
How did I get involved with Occupants? Through my producer, Howard Nash. Basically, Howard Nash has been the producer of my feature films since 10 years back on a film called PJ. So we did PJ, Chasing the Green, The Legends of Nathiah, and now Occupants. And in all four of those films, Robert Picardo has been one of our actors. So we go way back. Yeah, but basically... Howard is the one who founded the script from our writer, Julia Camera. He looks for a lot of scripts, right? And he liked the script, and he optioned it from her in February of 2014. And basically what happened was once he optioned it, since, Howard and I are pretty much a producer-director duo, he showed me the script, and I loved it. And I said, oh, we got to do this. And what happened was over the next couple of months, we were thinking about how to do it. And we decided on a crowdfunding campaign called Indiegogo. And we were able to successfully raise the money through that site. And then we started shooting the film September, and we shot to October 2014. We finished it in December 2015, and that's where we are right now.
All right. I think we've got Robert on the show. Are you here, Robert?
Yes, I am. Sorry, I called in and was disconnected because technology and I, we have issues.
Hi, Bob.
Well, thank you.
Hi.
Thank you so much for calling in.
My pleasure. Hello, Michael. Hello, Russ.
Bob, how are you?
I have to be introduced to our host.
Yes, hi, I'm Jonathan. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Jonathan. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I guess we were just talking about how you and Russ actually worked on a few projects together and stuff. How did you guys end up meeting?
I believe we were introduced through Howard, who is the producer of Occupants as well. I had done I think I've done two or three movies with Howard over the years. I think the first one was a movie about a pair of brothers who were very successful entrepreneurs in the cell phone business in like the late 70s, early 80s. I cannot remember the title of it, but it was pretty successful. It was I think it was a golf metaphor. Do you know what I'm speaking of? I know you didn't direct that one, Russ.
No,
what was it called?
I did direct that one. I did direct that
you
one.
You did direct the first one we did?
Yeah,
oh,
we
Chasing
did.
The
yeah,
Green,
that,
forgive me. I won't. Then have you directed every movie I've worked with Howard on? Or was you did? You've directed all three movies. Boy, how embarrassing that is. You know what it is? It's just age. It's age, Russ. Russ looks now. If you meet Russ, he looks now like he's about 23 years old. So how he could have directed a movie, 10 years ago, I can't figure out.
Well, you know, technology. It's the year 2016.
That's beautiful.
So I've worked with. We've done Chasing the Green. We've done Legends of Nisaya. We've done Occupants, and I think there's one other one in there that I'm not counting. Is that right, Russ?
PJ. We did PJ.
Right, PJ. So yes, four movies. There you go.
Wow, that's incredible that you guys have been, you know, working for so long together. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I guess if you guys could each kind of, I'll go down the line, but I have these that are written down. What was what was the toughest thing to shoot, and what was the toughest thing to do as far as acting inside the movie? So, first of all, Russ, what was the toughest thing for you to shoot in that movie?
We had a scene. It's scene 69 in the film, and basically our actress Brianna White, who unfortunately could not be here today, but she played two characters. The film is about a young couple and their parallel version. So she and her parallel version were in the same shots. Now, the real version has blonde hair, and the parallel version is a brunette. So what we had to do is we had to shoot the blonde version first, keep the camera static in the same position, and then basically for 5 hours while she was dyeing her hair, we couldn't touch anything, and then she had to come back in as the brunette, and she had to do the action as the brunette, and basically they interacted where the brunette hit the real version. So, you know, the eye line had to match and everything had to match. And we did not know for 5 hours if we were able to get the shots, even though we planned it like crazy. Now, it turns out we did, and I was very happy. But that was the most difficult shot in the whole shoot.
Oh, awesome. Michael, what was the toughest thing for you to do as an actor?
I think Russ kind of hit the nail with the hammer there. I think it was just that transition between the two characters. It was, what was it, Russ? 5-6 hours, like you just said. It was that time period where you kind of have to change your appearance, change the way each character lived their life. And I think that was the most challenging part of the shoot. It was fairly easy. We had a great team. We had a great director. We had a great ensemble. Bob was awesome. And everything kind of just moved really nicely. And then when it came to that changing of the characters, a couple hours, I think that was the most difficult part of the shoot.
But you had an easy job. All you had to do was go to the barber.
Yeah, I just went to the barber, got a quick fade, shaved my beard, and away I went. But it's the mind space that you're trying to have to get into. But other than that, it was a really great shoot.
I wrapped your character, Neil. Neil's your character, right? I said it's a wrap for Neil, and then parallel Neil came on board. So it was like playing the second character.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Have you guys been watching The Flash, the TV show? They've been doing like parallel universe, you know, like Earth 1, Earth 2 kind of thing. Okay. So when I heard about Occupants, that's the first thing that popped in my head is like, wow, they did another movie, did kind of a similar story of alternate, like, people, you know, playing, you know, for you two, for your, you know, for the characters. Robert, you did your character have a alternate version, or were you just kind of?
No, I did
not.
I'm just kind of the, yes, I'm only one version, but I've done my alternate service in alternate universes on Star Trek, so I have lots of experience with alternate universes, but in this particular project, I only play in one universe. My character is, I guess, sort of the unreliable friend slash mentor of the I can't remember her character's name as the good
Annie.
Girl.
Annie,
that's right. Annie, who is proposes the experiment, I suppose, to her husband, Michael's character in the movie, she has a sort of a teacher mentor that I play, that and I communicate with her via Skype, and you're not quite certain whether I'm giving her good or bad advice in the movie.
You kind
is
of
correct? Yeah.
Well, I've noticed that with your characters, Robert, that you kind of always kind of play like a character that's either over one side or the other. You know, like you're either really good or you're really bad, or sometimes even in between. You know.
I think it's interesting to play characters that the audience may be mistrustful of at first, or may not particularly like at first, but then they grow to like them in spite of themselves. I think that's probably been my stock in trade, and certainly that my character in Star Trek and the other television series I've done, China Beach and all, I played a character that made a sort of an initial bad impression, but then you grow to understand him and why he has the foibles that he has, and then you see, hopefully, the character struggle to be a better person than he is. But in this case, in Occupants, it's sort of the reverse thing. I think I'm introduced as basically a good guy, as a mentor, but mm-hmm. you start to doubt whether that's the truth. So it's sort of the reverse for me. You know, I don't make a bad first impression. I just, you're not sure whether my first impression is trustable. Is that a good assessment there, Russ?
Yeah, it is.
I would say so.
You know, Annie trusted you more than Neil. Neil's character, Mike, he did not trust you at all.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, probably with good reason. Because his wife is pursuing a course of action, which first starts out as a little annoying and trying, and then grows downright dangerous. And that's at least because of my encouragement. So I don't blame him for not liking me.
So I'm guessing, I'm led to believe that by the end of the film, which unfortunately I have not seen yet, I hope that comes out soon, right? And I guess we can get to that in a little bit. But I wanted to say that maybe that by the end of it, you guys kind of know what, you know, the whole story of how the alternate universes kind of come to be is explained by the end of the film.
Well, let's just say it's up to each audience member to decide. I have my own interpretation of what happened, but I'm sure other people have different interpretations. So I don't want to just explain everything to the audience. I want them to think and decide for themselves.
See, I like that. That's a very, like, Donnie Darko approach to that kind of thing, you know, like you don't know exactly, you know, how, you know, like people have to come up and make up their own mind and everything.
But
and
you
that's
will,
better
but
than
you
people.
Will, but I promise you, you will like the ending.
Well, that's good to know. Now, Robert, I know, I guess I heard you might not have a lot of time on here on the show, so wanted to ask a few more questions for you if you guys have a little bit of time. How much of the movie are you actually in? Are you in a good amount of it?
Well, again, you only see me via Skype, but there are several calls throughout the movie to me. So I have quite a number of appearances, but you never go through the computer screen to my side of the world. You only see me on screen in the reality. It adds really to the claustrophobia of their situation as the young couple becomes more and more scared and threatened by this Pandora's box they've opened. I'm kind of a lifeline, except I can't really help them because I can't reach out and help them. I can only give them advice that, as I said, is increasingly unreliable. So I am seen a number of times through the movie, but of course most of my stuff was shot at one time because it was a single camera setup, and I think I had a pretty hefty load of dialogue that we shot over the course of the day.
But you had three changes of clothing.
I do. I had to change clothes for different days. And I didn't bathe, but if I were a method actor, I would have showered. I would have showered between clothing changes to signify the start of a new day. But we didn't have that luxury, so I changed clothes a few times, and I just do a lot of talking, looking right at the camera.
Yes.
In fact, I think after that, I'm ready to be a talk show host.
I'm happy to see that you, you've done a lot of films. I mean, I was looking at your IMDb; it's just huge amount of films and television and everything. And you still have, you still have time. I have no idea how you fit your time in to do like even independent films. And I think that's an amazing sign of a true actor.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. This last week, a week ago, tomorrow, I opened in the Coen Brothers' Hail Caesar, which is pretty darn funny. I went to the world premiere of the movie, and
awesome.
I'm only in one extended sequence in the movie, but that scene has been mentioned in virtually every single review. The New York Times called it side-splittingly funny, and Washington Post spoke about it for I think two paragraphs. So it's a great scene in the movie writing-wise, and it's wonderful to be in a Coen Brothers movie in a particularly well-written scene because the whole movie is well-written. But they talk about you get congratulated for their work because the scene is just laugh out loud funny when you read it. So I was lucky to get a character that had scripted lines that were so darn funny that I couldn't help but get laughs with them. So yes, that it's nice to be in a big movie like that. Although, frankly, when you play a minor role in a movie that's so star driven as that, you don't really get paid any better than you get in a small movie. So it's mostly just for the prestige factor of working with geniuses like the Coen Brothers and to be in a movie that all these big celebrities go to the opening.
Absolutely, but let me just cut in there and just say, but you deserve it all. Like, Bob, when he came on the set, he just really brings his knowledge and experience to everything. Like, you came in and it was just, you kind of just put the tension away and made everybody calm and relaxed. And we went over the lines and you really just kind of gave that cool vibe out. And it really helped me as a performer and also, Brianna as the week went on. So you deserved it all, Bob.
Michael. I appreciate this. The nicest compliment you can get as an actor of my age is the one Michael just paid me, because when I was a young actor at 24 years old, I played opposite the movie legend Jack Klemmon in a Broadway show, playing the second lead to his character, and that was that feeling of working with someone who's been doing it a long time and knows what they're doing, and in his case, in Jack Lemmon's case, he was a beloved movie star for 25 years and all that. To have the experience as a young actor to work with someone like that, who was not only a consummate craftsman and artist, but he was just such a nice guy and so easygoing that I thought, gee, if this guy can, if this guy can be at this stage of his career and be a major star for 25 years and be such a a warm and accessible human being, then there's a role model for any of us, you know, to strive for. So I was lucky enough to have that experience as a young actor, and I think it kind of informed me as to the kind of actor I hoped to be. I hoped to try to be. So now, as an old man, when I work with young actors, I always try to, you know, I always try to remember to be mindful of that we're, you know, that every opportunity when you act with a younger actor is a way of giving back in some way, whatever, not lessons you've learned, just whatever blessings, I guess, you've shared throughout your career. And then you feel connected. I feel connected to my younger self as a performer when I work with young performers, like Michael and Brianna, that, you know, that are doing great work. And it's in a, you know, it's a relatively low budget movie, but that doesn't matter. The acting, you know, the demands and the material remain the same, whether you're spending millions to make it or you're making it on a tight budget. The actors, in fact, the demands are really more on the actors because they shoot it in a shorter schedule. So I feel connected to my own experience, I guess, as a young actor when I work as I did with two people that were, you know, at the early stages of their career.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention that, like, it sounds like you guys were on set together, you know, even though you guys, it was a Skype call and everything. So were you reading lines off camera and
yes,
stuff like that
they
to
read,
each other?
Yeah, they totally, the camera was on me that day, and they shot, had you shot their stuff already, or had you yet
no.
to shoot their side?
No, they're yet to shoot. So basically what you guys did on, it was, I think, day four, they then emulated it on day five or six. But wow. It was based on what you three decided on that shoot day.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I got to establish, I guess, establish what I did, and then they had to obey the eye lines and all that looking at the screen, although it's somewhat... Mm-hmm. forgiving, but you're still, you know, they're still trying to obey the looks, so that, you know, so that when my eyes looked right, I was looking at Annie, Brianna's character, who was, you know, who was on the, facing the screen, she was on the left and Michael was on the right. And basically,
exactly, yeah.
And if my eyes flickered back and forth whenever he spoke and she spoke, just so that the eye movements basically matched what you would do on a, you know, you don't,
yeah.
like obviously when you're looking at a camera, but I'm looking at their, supposedly I'm looking at their images on my side, which of course you never see. You never see me in my world looking at the screen, but just so the audience believes that we're having a regular Skype conversation. But I was, that day was, because I had so much material to shoot, that day was pretty much about me. I think we shot 22 pages. Is that possible? 22 pages of material?
It's possible, this was a found footage film.
Yeah.
We didn't have, like, you know, we had, what, maybe three takes per scene, but we didn't have to do a close-up, a medium shot, or an establishing shot. It was just you on the Skype. So that's why we were able to do all those pages.
Yeah, it was a lot. I remember it was a lot. And I had some...
It was a lot, yes.
They gave me a... You know, some of it I knew, some of it we had little cue cards off camera, because the best thing about looking at a camera doing a Skype phone call is you can cheat a little bit with stuff I would never do when I was acting in a regular scene with other actors. I would not use cue cards, but under these circumstances, we helped me out just a little bit with some of the long speechifying, as I recall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's amazing that that's able to happen, because it's gonna be kind of tough as an actor to play, you know, talking to the screen and, you know what I mean, and being able to have, like, the reactions and the emotion, you know, when people are so everybody's got to keep their emotion at levels or whatever up, you know, like even off camera too.
Well, this is a film where you can break the fourth wall and you can look at the camera. So
it was, I guess, a different experience. I know for Michael, it was a different experience, you know, where I tell him, you can stare at the camera.
Yeah, a couple times throughout the scene, if it worked with what was going on and whatever the case was, then, yeah, it totally worked. But majority of the times when you're in that moment and you have cameras up, because it was a documentary that Brianna was doing, and she set up cameras around the house. So after day 30 or day 40, these cameras are going to kind of blend in as furniture, so you won't really notice them as much as you did the first week or the first couple of days. It just turns into every life day situation. So Russ had to kind of remind me a couple of times to kind of give a couple stares into the lens and deliver some lines.
Hmm. It was hard.
Yeah, that's always
hard. I mean, we're trained never to look at the camera, so it's
exactly.
it's odd to look at it.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're like an airplane style comedy or something where they you know, I know I was watching Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back and they broke the fourth wall like three freaking times, and you know, like, I guess in that kind of movie it's okay to do that, but you know, and in this movie it's okay because it's a found footage style thing, so there's cameras on you. You know?
Yeah.
But Robert,
would you mind if I excuse my if you have one more question for me, I'd be happy to.
Oh, no.
Otherwise, I need to excuse myself.
Yes, no, it's fine. Thank you so much for calling in, Robert.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I enjoyed it a great deal, and thank you, Michael, for your kind words.
Thank
and Russ,
no problem. Thank you.
Thank you as always. I'll look forward to film number 5 with Russ. All right.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Bob.
All right.
See
take
you,
care,
Bob.
Everybody.
Bye bye.
You too.
Ciao.
Bye. So Russ, what's you know, what's next for the film? Is it going to be out on you know, DVD soon, or is it going to be out in the theaters? What's going on with it?
Well, it's funny you say that. Tomorrow night, I'm going to be leaving for Baltimore, Maryland, where the film is going to have a preview screening at a Star Trek convention called Farpoint.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a preview screening, and then we're going to have another one in Ohio in May. And then with Picardo, we're going to have one in Florida, the Florida Supercom in Miami, and that's July 1st through 4th. So these are preview screenings at comic book conventions. At the same time, we are submitting to film festivals. But because the film finished in mid-December, we started submitting at that point because you never want to submit a work in progress. And I don't know if you know about film submissions, but there's like the early deadline, the regular deadline, and the late deadline, and like the very, very late deadline. Well, I always want to try for the early deadline. But by doing that, it means that we will not know if we got in or not several months later. So right now we're still waiting, basically, to find out whether we got into a film festival. So in the meantime, we have the comic book conventions, and we're going to have a screening at the University of Southern California, at the cinema school, which is my alma mater, and that's going to be on April 28th. And if you're available, please come to LA, and you're welcome to go see the film. But, yeah, that's what we're doing right now.
I'd probably have better luck getting to, was it Maryland for the other one?
Yeah, please. You're in Virginia, right? Please come up.
Right,
by.
Yeah.
It's just going to be me. It's just going to be me, unless, Mike, you want to come too.
I thought, yeah, bro, I'll be there.
wait, Robert's not going to be there at the
Robert.
Star Trek? Yeah.
We need Robert to give us a transporter technology. Then we can go anywhere we want. But I have to take an airplane to get there.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's awesome that it's playing at a Star Trek convention. You know, and
it,
everything, obviously, but because of Robert, you know,
yes,
connection.
It is because of Robert. He actually has been to that convention 20 years ago. It's in its 23rd year. It's one of the older Star Trek conventions. That's why I was so grateful that they were intrigued by it, basically, and they liked the subject matter. So I was very, very grateful to them.
Well, it's a sci-fi, I guess, would you consider it a horror film? It sounds more like a sci-fi film.
It's a sci-fi thriller horror found footage film, which sounds like a tongue twister.
But basically, it starts off as a found footage film, and then it becomes more science fiction, but then by the end, it becomes very horrific, you know? So it goes through different genres.
Yeah, definitely. Just so everybody knows, it's going to be ending live in a second. So if you're listening live, it might cut off on you by the end. So how can people reach you guys so that they can contact you?
Well, our website is occupantsthemovie.com. That's O-U-C-C-U-P-A-N-T-S. It's a plural, occupantsthemovie.com.
And, definitely. I can still talk to you for a couple more minutes or whatever. If there's any last things you guys want to kind of talk about, like what, Michael, what's going on with, what else have you been up to?
I currently got off a film that I co-wrote with my partner and the executive producer of The Occupants, Prem Singh. We wrote a screenplay called Tiger together. It's a boxing film based on a true story about a Sikh man who was banned from the sport due to his religious beliefs. So he did whatever, you know, strong-willed man would do, and he fought back. And it's a battle between the court system and the boxing ring. So we attained his life rights. His name is Pardeep Nagra. And he's a great, humble man. And we wrote his life story, and we got it made with Mickey Rourke playing the lead, the mentor figure. And we got Janelle Parrish from the Pretty Little Liars to play the lawyer. And me and Prem and myself star in it. And we just wrapped, and now it's being sold in Berlin Film Festival for international sales. So it's exciting stuff, to say the least.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
You got to invite me to the premiere, Mike.
I'll send it.
Got to make that promise on the air.
I'll send it through email, my man. It's on the way.
All right. Well, I want to. There's one more thing I want to mention. We're having a comic book tie-in to Occupants, and we're actually going to it's a spinoff basically, where your character Mike does cameo. But it's based on the institute run by Picardo's character, and we're going to have a release party on the 20th in Tempe, Arizona, and it's a release party to basically for our Indiegogo campaign that we're going to do for that. But we already have the first two pages of the 24-page comic book.
Do I get a copy?
Oh, if you want one, yeah, you can have one.
Awesome.
But we hired a DC Marvel's Comics artist named Dave Beatty. So he has drawn the first two pages and the cover. So that's where we are at this point. So that's going to be next Saturday on the 20th.
That is awesome. I love when people do that. I just had another guest recently who just did a movie, and they're doing a comic book tie-in or something. So I just... To me, that's awesome that the two kind of like different mediums are kind of joining together these days.
Mm-hmm.
With our film, it deals with parallel universes, so you have unlimited possibilities. That's what we're exploring, is another universe, basically. You know, in this parallel universe, it's a very different, drastic world. Basically, in a comic book, you could do a lot more than what we were able to do in the feature film because of budgetary constraints. So we opened up to imagination, like explosions, battles, whatnot. So it's a lot more violent, you could say.
Oh, awesome. I would love to see that when it comes out, the comic and the movie.
You'll definitely see it.
Okay. Is there anything else you guys want to mention or get out there for your fans?
That's about it. I want to thank you again for having us on the program, and I really appreciate it very much.
Absolutely.
Guys are very welcome, and you guys are welcome anytime. I know I'll probably have you guys come back on at some point, just even individually, sometimes to talk about different different things, you know, that are, you know, going on. Because, I mean, you guys are both busy doing your own things and everything. So it's awesome to have you guys on here together and one day separately. So
thank you, guys.
Thank
you, Doe. Well, thank you for having us on at midnight your time.
It seems like Blog Talk Radio, like it's either 11 o'clock or 11:30 or whatever that I'm allowed to have this freaking time, because other times it's I have to pay to have it like at the prime time, you know, or whatever. So it's for you guys, I guess. You guys are out in California, right?
Well, I am, and so was Bob, but
I'm from Toronto. I'm from Toronto, let's see. So it's
calling internationally. That's awesome.
I am, yeah. So we're
it's
the same time zone.
Film. It's an international film, so he has to be international. Just kidding.
Well, I will say I have had a lot of Canadian guests on my show before. Just recently, we had Kate Todd on. I don't know if you know her from Radio Free Roscoe and other stuff like that out there. So, but she's wonderful, and so we definitely love having our Canadian friends come out and call in and everything. Canada loves my show, so.
Michael taught me a word that I can't get out of my head now. And thank you,
which
Michael,
is?
Because it's very wicked.
Wicked?
Wicked?
Wicked,
yeah,
man.
I guess that was the word that I said numerous amount of times on set, and it kind
wicked
of got stuck
cool.
in Russ's head.
Wicked awesome.
Wicked awesome.
Well, isn't wicked more like a New England term? Or is that also a Canadian term?
No, it's not really a Canadian term too much. I don't think. Anyway, I don't know. It's something that that I was saying, I guess, a lot on set. So
you were.
It kind of got stuck in Russ's head.
Yeah, that and cheese pizza.
Yeah, and then the pizza jokes. Some
there
inside
were a lot
jokes
of pizza
that we
jokes.
Had
if you want, but. By the way, Russ, my buddy Paul Sieber, who was on my show recently, I was just chatting with him online. He's going to be at Farpoint. So he's premiering, I believe, the last episode of his Star Trek fan series thing called Starship Farragut. So if you see that, he said it was Saturday at 10 p.m., so I had to, I guess, give him a plug. So if you might be able to see him or something. So.
Yeah, well, our audience is speaking at 6 p.m., so it'll be probably directly after that, is my guess.
Yeah, almost.
His program.
Yeah, almost after that, right?
I would love to meet up with them. Can you let them know that I'm going to be there?
I told him you'll be there, and so with that film, so he might be able to check it out. I don't know what his schedule will be there, you know. I'm sure you'll be watching a lot of the films, you know.
Yeah.
But once again, thank you guys so much, and I'll let you know more about him, you know, via Facebook and stuff, kind of.
Yeah, we're Facebook
you know,
friends. That's right. Love Facebook.
Yes. Social media is definitely a great tool to get out there. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a lot of my guests on my show if it weren't for that. So.
Well, that's the beauty of the year. That's the beauty of living the year 2016 and not, let's say, 1986. I mean, the internet is just incredible. We could not have an occupant without the internet. It would have been impossible.
Well, it would have been a different movie.
Yeah.
You know?
it would have been a movie that didn't exist.
Yeah, because you wouldn't have done the crowdfunding thing, which is, you know, internet has, you know, created that, basically.
Amazing. The crowdfunding is amazing. That's an amazing tool. Just what you can do with it, whether it's Indiegogo, Kickstarter, or GoFundMe. It's just amazing. And it only happened in the last, 5, 10 years?
Well, I do have to ask, because I've had, I've had multiple Indiegogos, and I've actually been successful only in a couple things. I did I've done one successful Kickstarter and like one or two successful like Indiegogo things. What is your what was your trick for it? Like, how did you get the funding for that film?
Two words: Howard Nash. Producer of the film.
So he was the one who really like helped get it out there.
Oh yes, it's
okay,
Howard Nash. Howard Nash. I'm going to plug his name over and over again. Howard Nash. Without Howard Nash, there would not be Occupants. I would not be working with Robert Picardo or Michael Pugliese or have any films under my belt. So Howard Nash.
All right. Well, thank you guys once again, and hope you guys enjoyed the show, and definitely going to welcome you guys back at any time.
Thank you. We'll be back anytime. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, John.
All right, no problem. All right, you guys have a great night.
You too. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, everybody, that was the Occupants Roundtable Show. Thank you guys for listening. Tune in next week. We got a whole load of people. Just tune in. Also check the Facebook page again tomorrow. I think I'm going to be starting to post all this stuff for next week. So you'll see all the people coming up. Check the Independent Corner Radio Show on Facebook. Thank you guys, and thanks once again. Awesome to have everybody from this movie that we're able to come on and talk about it. So thank you guys so much. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a great night. Bye.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Right now at O'Reilly Auto Parts, pick up 2 5-1/4 ounce bottles of Lucas Fuel Injector Cleaner for $9. Clean and lubricate your fuel system while increasing miles per gallon with 2 bottles of Lucas Fuel Injector Cleaner for $9 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Limits apply. See store for details.
Oh, oh.